to respond to some of those points, I have joining me now the Shadow Assistant Treasurer, Andrew Lee. Andrew Lee, welcome.
Thanks, Patricia. Great to be with you again.
So you heard Matthias Cormann there. He said, yes, they will ensure that people get the tax cuts that they had promised.
Well, Patricia, he's promised that those tax cuts would be delivered on time, and now looks as though they will be coming late, contrary to what Scott Morrison was saying back when the tax cuts were announced. After the budget, he said, Parliament doesn't need to sit. You can just do it administratively. Labor said that wasn't the case. The tax office said it wasn't the case. The government just denied it. So we were willing to pass those low and middle income tax cuts for the forthcoming year straight after the budget. The government waved their hands, said, no, we don't need to do any of that. And they now have been told by the tax office that they're wrong. And they've ended up just 3 days after the election breaking promises to the Australian people.
Well, according to Matthias Cormann, it's not a broken promise. He says it will be delivered. He suggested there wouldn't even be a delay.
It's contrary to what Scott Morrison was saying today. He's suggesting very clearly that there's going to be delays in the payment of this tax cut, which has bipartisan support. Question is, Patricia, how hard is it to deliver a tax cut that has bipartisan support? Sure, we're having debates over the tax cuts that go to people in the top income tax bracket. We're not having any debate over getting this done. And so I'm really troubled by the fact that the government is already breaking its word to the Australian people 3 days after the election.
Well, is it? Because it says it will legislate and get them out in time. So until, I suppose, the delay happens, we don't have any evidence that it will be delayed, do we?
The Prime Minister seemed to be suggesting today that there would be a delay.
But we've heard a clarification from the Treasurer, haven't we?
Well, they've been saying a whole lot of different things, Patricia. They were saying originally that you didn't need Parliament to return. And now they've backflipped on that and acknowledged Parliament needs to return. And the fact is, you know, this goes to a broader question about the coalition. Yes, they've won an election, but they're a policy-free zone. The Prime Minister is an empty slogan and a baseball cap, hopelessly divided. You know, you saw this in the last week of the campaign with New South Wales Nationals against New South Wales Liberals. They don't have a guiding philosophy for how they want to tackle not just this particular tax cut, but also challenges like climate change or rising unemployment, wage growth, household debt. You've got the Reserve Bank looking now at rate cuts because they're worried about wage growth in the economy. So there's big challenges out there, but I'm just not sure the government is up to addressing some of them.
Now, the government wants to provide its entire tax package to the Parliament, to the lower house and the upper house, of course. Given they've just won an election and this was their main policy that they took to the election, nothing, you know, nothing sneaky about it. We knew it all. It was outlined in the budget. They talked about it quite a lot throughout the election campaign. Shouldn't Labor back it in? Because it means the majority of voters have said yes to it.
I'm sure we'll work through that decision using our normal consultative channels. But let's not oversell the result. On a two-party basis, we're currently tracking at 49% of the vote. Meaning that we got about 5.1 million votes, not the 5.3 million votes that we were hoping for and would have allowed us to form government, but a couple of hundred thousand short of what we wanted. I think that 49% of Australians who voted Labor would want us to stick to our values and at the very least to go through the proper caucus and processes. We don't suddenly turn into a rubber stamp for the Liberals just because we lost an election.
Okay, but if it's all presented, and of course, as one single piece of legislation, you don't want to delay people getting their tax cuts, do you?
I don't think that tax cuts for low and middle income Australians should be held to ransom by the rest of the Liberals' agenda. That's why we said we were willing to pass them back in May when back in April when the budget came down, and the coalition said that they didn't need legislation. We said you do need legislation and we'll help you get it through the Parliament straight away. Chris Bowen was very clear with that, but the coalition just waved their hands away.
Let's talk about the election loss. What went so wrong?
I think a number of things. I think we took a very ambitious agenda to the Australian people, probably the most ambitious of any opposition in the post-war era. We can certainly be proud that we're able to not only have policies across from multinational tax to competition education reform, but also that we're able to balance the books better than Matthias Cormann to have stronger surpluses over the 4 years and over the 10 years. But we were faced by an opposition, a government that was behaving like an opposition, that was ruthless in targeting us, didn't really have any policies of their own, made it a referendum around us. And so I think in that challenging environment, we weren't good enough at articulating why the case for change.
Okay, it's all about the articulation or the argument. Don't you think the policies were also part of the problem, that your franking credits policy, your negative gearing policy as well, were just not liked by the electorate?
We'll certainly need to go through and assess those policies. And after any election loss, invariably there's policies you don't take to the next election and there's policies you do take to the next election. We'll take our time over that. But the one thing we won't do is to retreat from being the party of ideas. There's parties of initiative and there's parties of resistance. The Coalition is a party of resistance. Labor is the party of initiative. Speaking just on Saturday night to one of the volunteers for our campaign who spent a chunk of time homeless, and Nick was saying to me, you know, it's really vital that for all those people who are struggling on the margins of society, that Labor never gives up. That we continue for people like Nick and for those who are out there sleeping rough or doing it tough to be formulating the policies that they need.
Sure, but haven't you let people like that down?
I think that's right. I mean, I think when Labor loses an election, we're unable to deliver for the most vulnerable, we do let those people down. And that weight of responsibility sits very heavy on my shoulders as somebody who has worked my heart out for the last 3 years to see a Labor government in office. That's why we'll take this process very seriously of rebuilding. But it's also important to remember, Patricia, that policymaking is a bit like a muscle. So we've grown stronger as we've worked together as a united team in forming policies. And that we won't stop doing that. We won't stop that process of thinking long-term about how we tackle climate change and how we deal with the issue of sluggish productivity. What we do about the fact that the business startup rate has fallen over the last decade. These are real challenges for Australia, and people expect Labor to be thinking about those challenges, to be driving the debate, even from opposition, as we've done on a range of issues over the last 3 years.
Do you agree with Anthony Albanese's assessment about the franking credits policy that Labor took to the election, that it did hurt people who were not very rich?
I think it had an impact on the votes of people who weren't going to be affected. I think its impact rippled out further than we had expected. Certainly, as the policy was structured, the poorest two-thirds of retirees, those who get the pension, weren't affected. But I think the lie about a retirees tax did bite in ways that we hadn't anticipated at the outset.
And, of course, the negative gearing policy too. Given the circumstances had changed so much in the housing market since the other election, the one before where you also took it to the election, do you accept that people feel very differently now about a policy like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge there was just the way the policies were rolled together by the Coalition into lie after lie, abetted by absolutely outrageous scare campaigns from One Nation and Clive Palmer. The amount of money that Clive Palmer poured into misleading campaigns was astonishing. So we're up against a lot, and we were fighting on a lot of fronts as a result of having this very broad agenda. Now, I don't resolve from the fact that we had great policies for charities, that we had terrific policies in the area of local sporting facilities, but we did have an awful lot to explain, and sometimes the burden falls on those calling for change rather than those calling for the status quo, as the Coalition was.
So now that, of course, it's all done and dusted, Australia has decided, what does it mean in terms of the way that you talk about aspiration too? I've spoken to many of your colleagues who say that Labor didn't talk enough about growing the economy, aspiration, growing the pie. It was all about redistribution rather than growing the pie. Do you think you need to develop more policies around aspiration and growing the pie?
You and I had a number of interviews during the campaign, Patricia, and you'd remember for those I was frequently speaking about the importance of growth, about my concerns around productivity, about the importance of our Australian Investment Guarantee, creating a more pro-competitive environment for scrappy startups to compete against bloated monopolists. So I'm a pro-growth progressive. I believe passionately that Labor has those policies and needs to continue with them. Perhaps we didn't emphasise them enough in certain contexts, but it's always been one big difference between us and the Greens that we believe passionately in growth. We see growth as being vital. We also don't see aspirations just in terms of somebody buying their 12th house, but also in terms of the chances for a young kid born in a poor neighbourhood to grow up and become a CEO. That intergenerational mobility is central to Labor's message.
So who are you backing in the leadership ballot? There are two candidates now, Anthony Albanese and, of course, Chris Bowen. Who do you support?
Oh, I think, like most of my colleagues, I'm keeping my cards fairly close to my chest.
We have two
terrific candidates who are streets ahead of the Prime Minister in experience in Parliament, in their understanding of the issues, and their values and their ethics. They're both great contributors to the Labor movement. They both love Labor. They are Labor to their bootstraps.
Okay.
We'd be served very well by either of them. Both of them would take the fight up.
We're choosing
not just the next Labor leader, but also Australia's next reformist leader. The job of leading the Labor Party is different from the job of leading the coalition. We're not just another political party. We're not just Coke and Pepsi, two different brands of the same thing. We are the reforming party in Australia, and we are therefore selecting the leader of the next set of reforms that Australia needs.
Just some clarity. Have you decided and you just don't want to tell me, or are you still open to either of the candidates?
I admire your tenacity, Patricia. I'm, again, keeping my cards close to my chest.
You may have decided you may just not want to tell me or our listeners.
That's entirely possible. One of the great things about the Labor Leadership Contest is it will also be a conversation about the kinds of things we've spoken about before, about the Labor loss. It's one of the things that I admired about our 2013 Leadership Contest, that as those conversations occurred around party members, we also had a conversation about the direction for the Labor Party, which is almost as important as choosing the individual that leads us. And naturally, it's a great reason for people to join the Labor Party, join the Liberal Party or the Greens. You don't get a say in selecting their leader. But members of the Labor Party, one of the great benefits that come from being that isn't just being part of the oldest and greatest political party in Australia, but having a say in choosing the leader.
Okay.
One more reason to sign up.
All right. Don't try and recruit. I yell at Liberals who try and do that too on my show, so I'm going to be consistent. Don't try and recruit on my show.
You're telling me you're not going to join, Patricia?
I am definitely. I can exclusively reveal I will not be joining the ALP.
Is it just that you're undecided, or you've actually made your mind up that you're not going to join the Labor Party?
I've made my mind up. I'm not undecided. I have made my mind up. I won't be joining any political party.
Well, it's disappointing, but fortunately, many of your listeners will be having their pens out, logging on to their local Labor Party website as they speak, I expect, wanting to have a say in this terrific democratic process.
Andrew Lee, thanks for coming on the show.
You're throwing me off here now, Patricia.
Yeah, I am. It's over. That's the shadow assistant treasurer, Andrew Lee.